This podcast is presented by Pacific Office Automation, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Learn more at pacificoffice.com.
Pulled in by Wilson for a touchdown. What a throw by Kyler Murray facing pressure. Connor to the five and into the end zone for the touchdown.
Welcome to Cardinals Underground, presented by Pacific Office Automation. Visit pacificoffice.com. Problem solved.
Middle of the end zone, picked off. Kaiser White with the interception.
The latest news and notes from the insiders who cover the team.
Touchdown, Kyler Murray. That defender is in multiple pieces.
Oh, that was nasty right there, right?
Slam to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield.
I ain't scared of nobody.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
What's the first sign or maybe first component of any great workplace culture? Dare I say accountability? I've heard the word accountability a lot over the past year, have we not?
What's so funny? What am I missing?
You're not missing anything. I just find it humorous.
Darren might know where this is trending without really knowing. Danny, you've been known to hold Darren accountable on more than one occasion.
I was wondering what you were going to say I've been known for.
I thought I'd maybe join in right off the top here. Once again, you know, the trust tree is in effect, okay? This is only a place of productivity here on Cardinals Underground, especially TikTok trending towards the draft. Darren, I find it perhaps a little bit disingenuous at best, hypocritical at worst, that you tend to rail against the mock drafts, except if I was to look at your screen right now, what are you engaging in as we speak?
Not what you want, Paul. It's a list of what we're talking about. So
because moments ago, Craig Grealer was in here, and you guys were discussing mock drafts.
We were talking about mock drafts. Although, and I certainly don't want to take this off the rails right away. But
Are you sure you're not biting the hand that's literally feeding you the content that gets you through till the draft?
But that's kind of, if we're going to talk about accountability, I did want to share this brief non-football story.
Okay.
I happen to be playing basketball with my adult sons. Have a game on Sundays that they're kind enough to invite me to, and I was playing with my older son was on my team and my younger son was on the other team, and they tend to guard each other because that's what brothers do.
Gotcha.
And
the fact you don't have a walking boot on right now, it was a success for you. Well, forget win or lose, as long as you don't get injured, you're good.
It's interesting you bring that up,
okay,
Paul.
All right.
I went to go set a pick as my older son, who's my height and weighs about 220. So he's not a small person. I go to set a pick for him as he's dribbling. So he's coming at me, and so he's going to go off my left shoulder. And my other son's coming, and he sees it. So he's going under the screen. For some reason, my older son, in his quest, properly trying to come off my shoulder as tight as he can, because that's how you run a screen, and too many people in the NBA don't know how to do that. But that's not a here nor there.
Darren will be holding a summer camp near you.
Unfortunately, instead of coming right off my shoulder, he collided with me, all 220 pounds of him, and it hurt. I was down. I was yelling his name as I was like, "What are you doing to me, Alec?"
Down goes Dad.
It was not good.
Okay.
Friendly fire.
That's good. Okay. All right. Well, I don't see braces, or you might be on painkillers for all we know.
I was limping later. I had something wrong with my right heel or something. Like, it's probably stupid that I'm doing it, but I'm doing it anyways.
Sounds like something you might say about those mock draft simulators. Stupid that I'm doing it, but I'm doing it anyways.
That's okay. True. We could probably
all right,
say
there you
that,
go.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's see. There is a lot being said this week, and there will be a lot more to say here on Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation. And dare I say, Danny Sorek, that the one thing perhaps that we can believe about the Arizona Cardinals in any sort of trade scenario that might be in the ether, right? Some teams may be trying to speak it into existence. The one thing we can believe, it wouldn't be the who or the what or the how much, the where or the why, but the when. Seems to me that based on what Monty has said and based on multiple reports, thou shalt not trade number 4 overall until that was on the clock, right? I mean,
that's what makes the most sense.
That's the only thing I can believe right now.
The Cardinals would lose a significant amount of leverage if they made a trade before the draft, before seeing what exactly New England does. The fact that the Broncos traded and now got quarterback Zach Wilson from the Jets before the draft. That alone is telling, okay, whatever discussion's being had, Denver probably doesn't think they are in the running to trade up and get a quarterback. There are things like that instance that are still happening before the draft, night one, Thursday, that it would not make sense, in my opinion, for not just the Cardinals, but any team with that high of a pick to go ahead and make a trade before you're on the clock. You want to know what your options are. And what if you get in the moment and whatever you're getting from teams is not what you want? Then you can stay and you can pick whoever you want. The Cardinals are in a win-win situation by not making a decision like that until they are on the clock, pick four, round one Thursday.
Hey, Omo, could you go ahead and after this is done recording, drop in the six or seven times I've said that exact thing over like the last 2 months that it's not going to happen until they're on the clock? Thank you.
It is now being widely reported, Darren, what you have been saying for months, if not weeks,
look,
months.
You're
right.
That's why he's not an insider. He's insider.
Look, I'm not trying to act like I know more. That's just common sense. It's hilarious to me that all these people are saying, well, Monty Osifort's not going to do anything.
No what?
Okay, you need to beep that too. I don't even know why this is news. Like, to me, this has always been what was going to happen. There was no other way for it to happen.
Let me just ask you this. What if you have a set price, right? Like, this is the best I could possibly do. I probably won't get it, but this is what I'm asking for, and you get it. It's a day or two before the draft. Do you take it just in case, oh, I don't know, New England steals your thunder, the Boston Herald reporting moments before we crack these microphones that their GM, Elliott Wolf, has fielded a bunch of phone calls and trade offers for that third overall pick. Now, a source tells the Boston Herald that the Patriots consider them, quote, laughable, and they're still waiting for a, quote, serious offer. But the fact that that got leaked tells me that New England is interested in trading number three, and they're trying to convey the message, up your offers.
And that may be true, but again, in your scenario, like, it still doesn't make any sense. Okay, maybe if you don't have somebody that you really like at four, I suppose you might want to do it. But the mere fact where you said, I know I'm getting the best I'm going to get a day or two before the draft, first of all, I don't think that any GM would ever think that, because deadlines, pressure and deadlines are what causes the best deals, number one. And number two, that's malfeasance from every other GM that's trying to trade with you if they're giving you your best offer now.
Well, here's the other thing I'll just throw out. Danny, think about this. Okay, Denver wants to come up, we presume. Do they really have the assets and the capital? The Raiders presumably want to come up. Do they really have anything that would enable them to come up into the top four? Minnesota. Okay, Vikings, now we're talking. They have 11 and 23. Maybe they throw in something else, whether it's a future first, a second, maybe best case scenario, Justin Jefferson. Here's the thing. You had Kevin O'Connell over the weekend at a fireside chat at this mega church, and it was a bunch of Vikings fans. You can find the video. Somebody shot it. It was like professionally shot.
That all seems very odd all the way.
And
around.
He took questions.
Is that a Mad Lib?
He took questions at the very end, and there was one very vested Vikings fan who had a very detailed question, he's breaking down all the quarterbacks, and then he had a follow-up question. He said, well, what about your Patriots connection, Coach O'Connell? Now, I don't really know what Kevin O'Connell's connection to the Patriots is.
He played quarterback for them, Paul.
There you go. Thank you, Darren. His answer was, the Vikings head coach, well, I may or may not have sent a nice bouquet of flowers to Robert Kraft the other day. Wait a minute. Could New England steal the Cardinals' thunder and fashion their own mega deal with the Vikings?
Wouldn't the Cardinals still be in a win-win situation if Minnesota, who desperately needs a quarterback, would trade up to three to get a quarterback? The Cardinals could still stay at four and get whomever they wanted that's not a quarterback. Like, that doesn't really stress me out. Probably stresses other teams out, but again, I feel like that gives the Cardinals more leverage of, if somebody like New York knows that Minnesota might actually be going for pick number three, like, that might make New York kind of try to get going a little bit more. When you're looking at the needs for Arizona, like, they're still just in a good spot with opportunities and waiting until they are on the clock.
The other thing too is, and yes, if Minnesota were to do a trade with the Patriots, that takes away the one team with two first-round picks this year. So I guess I kind of understand that idea of it. But there's somebody, I feel like there's somebody in this room has been telling me that four quarterbacks are going over the first four picks anyways.
I think there was a hashtag for that. You're still
going to have the fourth pick and people wanting to trade into that, you know, assuming that whoever was saying that is right.
Mm. Mm, yeah, let there be a fourth QB.
That's what it was.
I do believe that has transpired. That has actually happened. So, okay. And you're right, Danny. I've been of the belief for a while that, hey, if you don't get a deal you like, that you don't think is acceptable, feasible, plausible, whatever, guess what your default plan is? Marvin Harrison Jr. Hello. And then you move on. So, again, and I railed about this with Craig Grelu on Cardinals Cover 2. NFL Network threw up a graphic, and the question to the roundtable was, who's under more pressure, the Broncos or the Cardinals? Wait a minute. Broncos don't have a franchise quarterback. They don't have the assets to go get a franchise quarterback. Cardinals have their quarterback.
They're paying a lot of money for a quarterback they don't have anymore.
Right. Yes, yes, an $85 million cap hit or whatever it is. And, I mean, is there anything that presents more pressure in the NFL than trying to find your franchise quarterback? And yet the Cardinals are sitting there at number four, and at very worst, they have their pick of the best position player on the board.
Not to make light of this, but I did see a funny tweet that said, you know, the Broncos had so many leftover Wilson jerseys that they had to make a decision.
That's good.
Hence,
that's good.
Zach Wilson.
Zach Wilson.
Actually, the worst part about it is that's what everybody said. Oh, this works out well, not only for the team, but also for their team store. When you just keep, except Will Lutz, the veteran kicker who signed previously as a free agent, already took number three.
Well, and there again is another layer to pressure. Okay, so Denver's got to give up what exactly to move up? They have to deal with, and then there's also the risk factor of history says two of the top four quarterbacks are going to be busts, right? I mean, you're Washington. This is just me thinking out loud. You hire the assistant GM of the San Francisco 49ers, who is intimately involved with that whole execution of the Trey Lance deal. And now you're giving him the keys to draft a quarterback number two overall. Adam Peters goes from the Niners to Washington. My first question in the interview process was, how much did you have to do with the Trey Lance trade?
I'm guessing zero. That's what my guess is. The whole thing is, I saw a quote that I used in a blog post from the Chargers first year GM, Joe Hortz, who they're obviously at number five. There's been talk about them possibly trading. And I really like this quote. Talking about trading back from five. There's certainly, it's too good of a deal, in air quotes, because of what you're getting back. Talking about people saying you shouldn't have to overpay. And there are trade charts that say if the Cardinals got 11 and 23 from the yep. Vikings, that should be enough for four.
Yes.
Okay. And we've all talked about how that's yep. not enough. Yep. So this guy's saying, this Charger GM, they have to make it attractive for us to move away from those players. The whole, it's a fair trade, it's a wash, I don't think that's a trade we're interested in. And I think that pretty much sums up what Monty Ossenfort said the other day when he was talking about, you know, telling his wife to move out of the house if somebody gave him a great deal that he wasn't expecting. But the other side of that is if you don't get that deal, no, I'm staying right in my house.
Okay, and that goes back to our QB kicker, right? The resort fee. We're going to tack on the fees, the transaction fees.
No, see, I thought you were looking for a dual threat player.
No, it's
quarterback
good.
And a kicker.
It's the whole, I saw Goodwill Hunting the other day, right? It's Ben Affleck going in to negotiate. Retainer! We need a retainer. Something a little extra. You're not just going to look at the Jimmy Johnson trade value chart and tell me that 11 and 23 equates exactly to somewhere between 3 and 4 overall, which it does, by the way. There's a reason the Minnesota Vikings went and targeted those two picks so they can viably call up the Cardinals or the Patriots and say, guess what? This equates exactly in the trade value chart. So to your point, Darren, no, it's going to take more than that because, let's be honest, look what happened last year. You moved out of number three, and that player who went number three overall ended up being the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year, right?
You did.
And so, okay, there's what you're leaving behind. Are you going to leave, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze on the board? And these are guys who could redefine the wide receiver position for all we know for the next decade.
There's also a chance that there's more to it than just trading back when you're talking about leaving one of those, what's projected to be a possible generational talent receiver on the board. Of there's a possibility that the Cardinals, if they do trade down from, let's stay with the same scenario, 4-11 with the Vikings, how do we know that general manager Monty Austin Ford is not doing that knowing he has the capital and the okay from a team between 5 and 10 to trade back up? We saw that last year to move up from 12 to 6 to get Paris Johnson.
Yeah. Hey, my ideal.
So I'm just that's for the fans that are going to be out at the draft party seeing Paul on stage, that if there's a trade moving down, don't necessarily throw food or gunk on him yet and boo, right? You could come back up. I'm looking out for you, Paul. That's
why I'm going to have some players. They're positioned perfectly.
As your bodyguards?
Exactly. I can just stand behind, my personal protectors, okay? It's not just Kyler Murray that needs protection in the pocket, all right? Could be the guy who has the mic in his hand. We'll see about that.
Those of us who have been in the journalism industry for a long time, it's you don't kill the messenger, right? You don't kill
ideally,
the messenger.
Ideally, you're right. Speaking of going down somewhere between 5 and 10, my ideal draft scenario, thanks for asking, would be the following. You trade with the Giants to number 6. Okay, quarterbacks go 1 through 4. And Jim Harbaugh is sitting there at 5 and says, got to have Joe Alt. Got to have the tackle. It's all about the trenches, the Jim Harbaugh way. I'm building the run game. I'm protecting my quarterback. So you move to 6. You get 1, maybe 2 second-round picks out of the Giants. And Marvin Harrison Jr., number 6 overall.
I like this power of manifestation, Paul. I'd be behind that.
I love it when people say stuff like this because it never happens this way. The Giants' second round pick is, they got it at 47.
Yes.
So would you go down to 6 for just for 47?
No. I don't know if you could realistically expect a second round pick next year as well, but I think round 2 and round 3 this year to go from 4 to 6. And that's perfectly, you can look Brian Daboll and Joe Shane in the eye, their GM, and tell them, look, you're getting your franchise quarterback for a second and third? Come on now, right? So do you really want to invest your futures, your personal futures, in Daniel Jones? In fact, there were a whole bevy of questions to Joe Shane when he met the media about, do you have buyer's remorse on Daniel Jones, on paying the guy who was drafted 5 spots after Kyler Murray, 2019? So there's that one. Or maybe you guys I'm just going to bring up the other two that I wonder maybe are in play by the time the Cardinals getting on the clock. Not only do you trade with Minnesota for 11 and 23, but you need something extra. Do you think Justin Jefferson might be part of that package?
No, I don't. I'm sorry, Paul. Okay. We keep bursting that bubble.
Okay. All right, I'll move on to the next one. Why do the Cardinals do the deal with Denver? So they get number 12, they get a future first, and Patrick Surtain.
That has been reported
out of Denver by a longtime Broncos insider.
That was before are you saying they would still draft a quarterback?
So the Broncos come up to 4, they take their quarterback. In return, the Cardinals get 12.
And Zach Wilson's the backup?
A future first. And Patrick Surtain.
I don't think Zach Wilson figures into this much. I think that's one of those, you take a flyer on him. Sean Payton sees what he can do with him, but I don't think Zach Wilson has any impact at the moment over where this might go.
Okay, so sorry, one more time, Ramey, what Denver would be?
So Denver would be, they would trade with the Cardinals. You give them number 4 in return. The Cardinals get number 12, a future first, and Patrick Surtain, a top 3 corner in this league.
Who's going into year 3, I believe?
Yes. Yes.
So he after this year, you got to pay him.
He was also the star of their uniform video this week, so maybe it's not that likely he would be on the trading block, but stranger things have happened.
Right.
So
I would be okay with that. I mean, New York is still the preferred trade scenario of those two, but I would be okay with that.
I don't think there's any way that the Broncos trade Patrick Surtain.
So, okay. And maybe you guys want to go, this is the only mock draft I'll throw out here. The Chad Ruder final mock draft, Cardinals trade number 4 to the Giants. They take J.J. McCarthy. They get a 2024 round 2 and that 2025 round 2. So that was what he had the Cardinals doing. And then at number 6, they get Rome Odunze. At number 27, they get Cooper DeJean, the DB out of Iowa. I say DB because some have him as a corner or a safety. At 35, they take the defensive lineman, Jerzon Newton out of Illinois. We can all see that happening. And then at number 47, I'm bringing this up because in this mock draft on NFL.com, Cardinals take Cooper Beebe, the guard out of Kansas State.
Yes.
But one of the reasons you would want that extra second-round pick is because of the players still on the board at that point. Braden Fist, the D lineman out of Florida State, still on the board. Mason Smith, the D lineman out of LSU, who's been up and coming, former five-star guy, was injured a lot at LSU. Jackson Powers Johnson, maybe the best center in this draft, franchise guy, still on the board at that point.
That was my question. He's fallen to the second round?
Yes. And even Edgerrin Cooper in this draft, the inside linebacker from A&M, if the Cardinals are going to go that direction. So when fans say, oh, just take Marvin Harrison Jr., well, wait a minute. You can trade down even to six and end up with a franchise building block type player near the top of round two.
That's a good point, is how much value there still is in a second round pick, especially in a draft like this year, for multiple reasons of the depth at two top positions, which you could still argue that an offensive lineman, I think you can argue, if you're not going to say tackle, is still a top need for the Cardinals. Now, they really do need, when you're looking at the starters right now, is who's your starting left guard. And the Cardinals have options there of, do you take a college lineman who already has versatility of playing inside or outside? Do you take someone who's been a tackle and let them kind of develop for a year or two? They have options. I still think that is a great need. And the other angle to look at it is how much value could be in a second round pick is the other areas of need that aren't as deep in the draft class. The D linemen, the DBs, right? A pass rusher. So that's a good point, Paul, of there's a lot of power and value in getting a second round pick if the Cardinals decide to make a trade in the first round.
Paul has a good point sometimes.
I mean, I've almost come full circle to where I started back in February in this whole process, that Cardinals get the receiver at 27 or 35 because it's so deep.
Possible.
That, to Danny's point, supply and demand, there are far fewer corners, far fewer edge rushers, dynamic defensive linemen, and that's the route you go in the top half of round one.
Can I do a timeout real quick? We got a text from behind the glass from our executive producer, Jim Omohundro. Perfect timing for the Broncos to announce that they picked up Patrick Surtain's fifth-year option today, as we are recording.
Which means he's going into his fourth year.
Okay, but also probably off the table for a trade.
No.
You don't think so?
Not that wouldn't. I still don't think they're trading him, but no, that just means you lock him up and you make sure that he's under contract another year. I still think, you know, again, when you start talking about the high-level guys, that doesn't stop him from wanting to hold out next year or whatever.
I mean, at least he's a fixed cost for 2 years, unlike a Justin Jefferson, who you figure you'd have to get a deal done right away.
So you're out on Jay Jettas now. Did that just happen in real time?
No. Oh. No. Look, the wide receiver bust rate is so high historically.
How high is it?
The Athletic recently did a story and they documented all of it. You can look it up. Diana Rossini is one of the reporters in there, and they documented, okay, look, to me, I know you got to pay Justin Jefferson if he's part of a deal. I get it, and I get he's going to command probably around $30 million a year. I understand that. But the cap just went up. Cardinals are in a pretty good place right now in their caponomics, and you eliminate not only the bust factor, but he is plug and play, a three-time all-pro receiver. He's going to turn 25 before this season starts. He is in his prime. He's an ascending player.
That's why no one's going to trade him.
So
he's not leaving the Vikings. Yeah.
Well, here's another reason why the Cardinals might not be interested, because, once again, there are so many receivers. We don't even have time here at Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation, for me to list all of them. So I'll just spotlight the two that Tom Pelissero threw out there. He did a lot of intel and calling around, and he listed four or five players that he thinks could end up as surprise picks in the first round.
In the first round.
Okay. In the first round, like late first round.
So we're talking about 27 at this point?
Exactly.
Then?
Okay. Maybe 35. Maybe. But the first one he highlighted was Keon Coleman. Michigan State basketball player, went to Florida State to finish, play football, and he had a disappointing 40, 4.61. So it took him out of the first round, theoretically. But everything else, I mean, he's 6'3 and a quarter. He's 213, 78-inch wingspan, supposedly has great hands, does not fight the football. He's a polished enough route runner. He's competitive, makes a contested catch. And they're drawing all these parallels to Puka Nacua, who didn't run real
Keon
well.
Keon Coleman. Interesting.
And the one comp that he got from some of the scouts, Anquan Boldin, who I looked it up, ran the 4.71, went round two of the Cardinals and blowed it up, right?
Yep, he did.
So, and by the way, Keon Coleman turns 21 next month.
Oh.
And they said he wasn't even training for football because he'd still kind of done a lot of basketball stuff when he worked out and got timed and all this sort of stuff. There's that. Then there's Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina, sort of a DJ Moore, Debo Samuel type, 6'1", 225. He's a burner, 4'3", 940. Supposedly is real natural catching the football, but because of other injuries and other circumstances and bad quarterback play until Spencer Rattler got to South Carolina, didn't really shine to this last year. So I'm trying to remind myself how historically deep this receiver class is. And to your point, Danny, if they end up going corner or edge early in round one and they leave receiver towards the bottom, I think it's feasible. And I won't be disappointed whatsoever. That's just me. Because I'm still trying to understand, is Marvin Harrison Jr. an outstanding prospect? I get it. But why is the Red Sea so head over heels about Marvin Harrison Jr.? Do you think just by chance that he happens to remind them of a certain Hall of Fame receiver who they so dearly loved and was on a first-name basis with the entire state of Arizona for so many years?
I think it's a couple things. I think, yeah, that's true to a certain extent. I think it's easy to make that comparison, but you could make some of those same comparisons with Adunze. I think, to me, the biggest reason, this is just me, one, yes, there's a lot of people saying he could be the best player in the draft. I think people have glommed onto that, although it's been very clear that people might look at all these receivers a little bit differently. I think the other thing, too, is I just think he's more famous. He's more famous than Rome Odunze. He's more famous than Malik Nabers. Both those guys had great years, but I would be willing to bet a large portion of the fan base had a much greater chance of hearing about Marvin Harrison Jr. before we got to this process than the other two guys.
The familiarity of it.
Yeah. I mean,
It's why once upon a time.
It's a sexy name.
And this is going back to 2006. It's why everyone lost their minds when the Cardinals drafted Matt Leinart. Because everyone knew Matt Leinart so well. He was a national celebrity at that point. The second most popular athlete in L.A. behind Kobe Bryant, right?
Yes.
There's Matt. Even the non-football fans knew Matt Leinart because there he is on the cover of People's 50 Most Beautiful People of 2006.
Paul was in there in 2007.
No, I was at his radio show that we did
when
there were actual fans who drove from L.A. for his one-hour radio show. Yeah. That's the sort of celebrity he was.
I remember those days.
So that's a good point, Darren. You're absolutely right. That's people feel like they know Marvin Harrison Jr.
Now, all that being said, he very well could be another Larry Fitzgerald.
No,
I don't
know.
Is there also some intrigue to the mystery
of
not doing, you know, workouts or the measurables or things like that?
No, I think this train was rolling well before we got to
the
combine.
But also of like, wow, he's so good that teams don't have a problem with that because they already know what they know.
I think, what is this? The trust tree? Is that what we like to call it?
Yeah, sure. Just the three of us. No one else is listening.
I feel fairly confident Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze would also be just fine in terms of top seven picks if they hadn't done those things.
Yeah. All right, so we'll agree to disagree. We'll agree on the following. How about this? We'll agree that it's not whether the Cardinals should draft a receiver high. It's where. Can they, should they, draft a receiver? And we'll get the answer on Thursday and Friday, right? So there's that.
And you'll get the first interview, Paul.
Well, we'll see if everything works out. Historically in the past.
What if the person's not in Detroit? Then he won't be able to see anybody.
He'll just be up there.
Call in from their house party.
Blowing in the wind.
So what'd you guys make since we last did Cardinals Underground, Monty Osifor, Jonathan Gannon met the media? Any takeaways whatsoever? Because if they're doing their job, you would basically have zero takeaways, right? They would talk for the half hour or so, really make no headlines, give you nothing of substance. You know, I mean, some of the things I wrote down, okay, the board is 95% to 98% complete. Hay is in the barn, as Monty said. It's now time to discuss scenarios. You know, what could possibly transpire? How do we react? How aggressive do we get if we see a guy we really like? What's it worth? He did admit that he's had talks with multiple teams, and multiple teams have checked in with the Cardinals, but that's the norm. And so, and then, of course, he told the story about the house.
The house thing, where he basically said, he's comparing taking the calls about the trade down from four about – If he lives in his house, he loves his house, his wife loves his house. But if somebody came up, knocked on the door and made an offer, essentially a great offer, he'd be like, okay, Mrs. Austin Fort, we're out of here, you know, and you'd leave. There you go. There's your thing. That's going to have to come down so it doesn't block me all the time. But
Darren needs the camera needs Darren.
Wouldn't it be interesting if I would have loved for them to come out and say, we're not 95, but we're 100% done. What do you think we've been doing up there? Of course we're 100% done.
Right.
Tough tiddlywinks. We're not going to tell you anything about it. Mm-hmm. That would be, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's essentially what we learned, which was not a lot, which is expected. Mm-hmm. We're really with most GMs.
He did say something that I think the fan should heed as somewhat of a warning or maybe a lesson learned, and that is when Monty said, you know what, we don't fall in love with players, but we do have conviction about players. So remember that if you have your heart set on a certain player come draft day.
If I'm a fan, that's what I'd want to hear, knowing that the front office doesn't have rose-colored glasses on and they're not making decisions based on the emotions rather than everything else that comes into play as well.
Here's the thing, though. The fans that are up in arms about, let's say, Marvin Harrison in this case, they don't see that as being emotional. They see that as he's the best player in the draft. Yeah. Why wouldn't you just do this? It's funny we're talking about people saying stuff, because I'm going to do a short piece on azcardinals.com Wednesday about the 20th anniversary of the 2004 draft, which was Fitz, obviously, and Darnell Dockett and Carlos Dansby. And, I mean, Denny Green had no problem telling you stuff. I remember being at the Combine his first year, and he basically said he loved J.J. Arrington so much that if he was there in the second round, the Cardinals were going to take him. And guess what? He was there in the second round, and they took him. Yeah. And then the time when I was sitting there, he was doing a TV interview, and I happened to be able to sit in on it because it was right out here. And he basically said, we have the number 3 overall pick, and yeah, we don't have a quarterback, really. But we like Josh McCown, and we're not going to take a quarterback at 3. Oh, and by the way, Larry Fitzgerald's the best player in this draft. I wonder what that could add up to. Wait, you don't want Eli Manning? You don't want Ben Roethlisberger? You don't want Philip Rivers? Nope. We've got Josh McCown. And by all due respect to Josh.
And by the way, Larry really thought he was going to the Raiders at number 2.
Yes.
And then out of nowhere, they took Robert Gowrie, the tackle, who was pretty much a flop.
I would be fascinated to know what the Cardinals would have done if Fitz had gone at 2. Do they then go quarterback?
Yeah, that's a great question. No doubt.
Because they liked Roethlisberger a lot.
Yeah. No question about that. So, all right. So, look, as for what else Monty said of any substance, he did talk about supply and demand. And he did say that, yes, supply and demand at certain position groups will push certain players up or down the board. So, for example, if everyone groupthink is, hey, there's plenty of receivers, we can get those guys later, then maybe there is a run on corner or edge, you know, in the first half, the first 20 picks of round 1. So I'm curious how that might come into play. But once again, you know, and he cited Sean Payton, you know, nice of Sean to say, because that's where this all started, really. Sean Payton saying it's good to be Monty.
Again.
And we keep hearing the phrase pivot point,
yeah,
catbird seat, to the point where, like, you know, State Farm Stadium, you know, has been referred to as the nest, right? The Cardinals war room at this point should be referred to as the catbird seat, because you've seen that associated with him so much.
I do think, I mean, yes, he didn't, there wasn't a ton of substance per se, but I think we all can agree that, like, I don't know how much, I mean, yeah, he could come right out and say, if we stay at 4, we're taking X or whatever, but, like, I think there's a lot of stuff that is unknown that he wouldn't be able to tell you at this point, because literally he doesn't know. I honestly believe, as we record this right now, he does not know if he's going to trade or not. I truly in my heart believe that.
What do I believe? That's a good question. Thanks for asking. I believe that Monty doesn't necessarily want to trade out a number 4, but I do believe somebody will make Monty Austin Fort trade out of number 4. I do still believe that. I think it's coming.
A deal that's just too good to pass up
on. Yes. And the evidence of that is the Chargers GM you cited earlier, and him saying to the media, we believe we have the first pick in the draft because 4 quarterbacks are going 1, 2, 3, 4 Obviously, the Cardinals aren't picking quarterback at four. That means somebody's coming up in a trade.
You want my gut? Thanks for asking. My gut is telling me that the Cardinals are going to stay at four. That's what my gut tells me.
Okay. And you want to attach a name to that?
Yeah, because I don't feel like people waiting outside and throwing eggs at my car, so I'll say Marvin Harrison Jr. I think to a certain point, there comes a time in different drafts, and there's a lot of moving parts of needs and cap space and all kinds of stuff. There comes a time where sometimes a player is just too good to pass up on. And I would think that's going to come into play of, are there some players, position players, that the Cardinals are going to have the opportunity to draft where they are, to where it doesn't really matter what you're getting, like that player is just too good to pass up on.
I agree with you 100%, and you need premium players at some point. I'm curious though, when we hear Monty say, if somebody comes to my door and offers me something great, I know he didn't say great, but that's what he was alluding to, like, what does that look like? So I'm going to pose to each of you, if it's the Vikings, so you're going down to 11, what does that package look to you like when you say, yeah, I got to pull the trigger on that?
I can tell you.
Well, that's good. I asked you.
11 and 23.
Yep.
A 2025 first.
Okay.
However, I would expect the Cardinals to have to give something besides number four. Now, I don't know if that's a two or a three this year, or maybe a two this year and a four next year. I don't know what the Cardinals would have to give. I would expect they would have to give up something in addition to the fourth overall pick.
Paul Calvisi, why don't you weigh in?
Yeah, well, it's got to be three first-round picks or the equivalent thereof. It's got to be two first-round picks and an equivalent player. Now, can you get away with demanding an all-pro player like Patrick Surtain or Justin Jefferson? Maybe not. For example, if the Vikings Danielle Hunter, for example, yeah. I would take two first-round picks and Danielle Hunter.
Okay, let's say they're not offering any players. I'm talking about picks.
Three first-round picks is what I would say. Would do it. Would absolutely do it. Now, two first-round picks and a second? Yeah, if you're on the clock and that's the best you can do, I would still engage that. I would still pull the trigger on that.
Okay.
Yes. In fact, it's Albert Breer who reported earlier today, quote, Cardinals have told teams that have called, and at least four teams have checked in, that the Cardinals do not plan to execute a trade until they're on the clock. So there you go.
Duh.
Yeah. So
what's maybe he's been listening to Cardinals Underground.
The Beastie Boys, no sleep till Brooklyn, so no trades till Detroit, apparently, is what has become full circle on that one there. By the way, did you see the Lions put out their new uniforms?
The Texans.
They put the 313 there in the collar, that's the new latest rage there.
Like on the inside?
Yeah, they put it in there, the whole area.
The Texans came out, they look pretty sick, yeah. I think. Darren doesn't think so.
By the way, you're talking about all the picks, and you need premium players. Isn't that essentially what Daniel Jeremiah tweeted out and or said recently? How do you know the insatiable interest in the NFL draft when the media spends more than 2 hours on a conference call with Daniel Jeremiah? And over the course of that call, he said, you talk about pivot point, that this is the opportunity for the Cardinals to set themselves up, in Daniel Jeremiah's opinion, for the next 5 to 7 years based on this draft.
It makes sense. It's a good point. You are building up the foundation that you started to set last year. Last year was about trimming the fat, figuring out who you wanted to keep and who you didn't want to keep from the previous regime, and really starting the development of all of your rookies. And this year is building upon that. And Jeremiah had a point of, when you're looking at teams who have been in similar transition periods to the Cardinals, who kind of go on a run, you can point out 1 to 2, maybe 3 consecutive draft years where you can see where that change really happened, where that foundation was set for teams that were able to kind of quickly get out of that transition phase and really ascend upwards. And that's where the Cardinals find themselves, and they have plenty of draft capital to get that going. Even if they decide to, they don't have as much capital next year, but even if they start to move some stuff around and maybe try and give themselves a little more cushion for next year, where I believe they're set to just have 6 picks in the next draft. But Jeremiah had some good points, and I agree that this is although awesome for it, yes, I agree. In his press conference, answered Darren's question saying every draft is important, and that is true. This one can really, really set the foundation moving forward.
I like the point that Jeremiah made that you it doesn't have to be one or the other. You can move around, maybe get a pick or two for next year to add to that six that you have right now and still get some blue chip players. And that'll be what the most interesting part of this. We haven't even talked about, like, let's say what happens if they stick and pick at four and then they decide to trade from 27 down to 31. You could get an extra pick there and
true
and all this. So,
yep.
I mean, these are the things that I think are all going to be in play as we go forward. And I'll be honest here. I'm going to be glad when four comes and goes on Thursday night, whether it's a trade or whatever. I'm like, I'm tired of talking about what might happen with that pick. I'm like actually kind of excited about 27 and 35 because it's not what we've been talking about.
Speculation season is coming to a close.
You know what Daniel Jeremiah said, at some point you have to start taking premium players. Having all those picks isn't enough. I thought of New England. How many years did New England keep trading down all those picks? Nobody had more picks in New England, but look at where the Patriots are now.
Yeah, okay.
They compiled picks, but they failed to convert them into players.
You're not wrong, but the difference to me there is when you're always picking 28, 29, 30, and it's almost the second round, that's I don't know if you're always getting premium players. Just because we're saying it's the first round, it's a lot different when you're picking in the top five. And it, you know, let's just say for argument's sake here, and who knows, it could be true, that next year we're talking about the Cardinals' first-round pick being, assuming they don't add one, the Cardinals' first-round pick is like 24. Our discussions are going to be a whole lot different. It's because they're picking so high. And in theory, and this is what Monty said the other day, like, I don't really want to be picking this high anymore. Now, you got to do some work to make sure that doesn't happen, but the speculation would only increase if you're talking about 24 because you're going to have a boatload of potential players that they could still get, and you don't know who's going to be gone ahead of you. But right now, when you talk about premium players, like, that's why I agree with you, the Patriots thing didn't work out because they also didn't draft well. I mean, just because you're trading down and stockpiling picks, that's not why they struggled. They struggled because when they did make picks, they were taking terrible players.
I also thought of Nick Caserio in New England, because what has he done with the Texans? Somebody pointed this out the other day, that Nick Caserio, in three drafts as the Houston GM, he's made 18 trades. He made 8 last year, he made 7 in 22, and he made 3 draft day trades in 21. How many did Monty end up making last year?
Oh, you didn't tell me there was going to be research.
Three.
So I bring that up because Monty had all those years in New England, who's notorious for making draft day trades. Nick Caserio had the background in New England. It's not a fluke, in my opinion, that the Cardinals and Houston Texans got together on a deal last year, the relationship between Nick Caserio and Monty Austin-Fort. So I wonder, is he trending in the same direction? Where, okay, when in doubt, you know what? We're trading it away or trading up. And then I also saw this asserted about one of the up-and-coming teams in the NFL right now, the Packers last year, had that huge blowout playoff win over the Cowboys. And just getting to the postseason, they were the fourth youngest team to reach the playoffs since the merger and the youngest to win a playoff game since 1970. And they just talked about how they went about in 2023, they had 13 picks. This year, they have 11 picks. It reminded me of the Arizona Cardinals and what the Cardinals are doing and the infusion of young talent and all these draft picks and every single position group is just trying to be made as competitive as possible. Bring in as many. Because ultimately, if you're a GM, what is your job? To get better at every position, right?
Yeah.
Now, is that feasible and realistic? For example, the greatest recent example was Mr. Irrelevant 2 years ago, Brock Purdy. So theoretically, there were the 49ers on the clock with the last pick of the draft. They're saying, how do we get better at quarterback? Let's take this kid. Now, that's never going to happen again in our lifetime where the last pick overall ends up being a franchise quarterback. But that's the objective. That's the aim. If you're the GM, every single pick, I'm trying to get better at that position than what I have. So, okay, you said about with that in mind, But I just thought, you know, in terms of that. And then a couple other interesting factoids. And you brought this up earlier, Danny, and I came back around to this. Sean McVay has never had a round one pick as head coach of the Rams.
The last Rams first round draft pick was Jared Goff. That was 2016, right? So that would make it 8 years ago.
Yes, yes. So now there's a lot in on the Rams going with quarterback, maybe Bo Nix in round one, because Matthew Stafford, so, after this year, has no guaranteed
where they,
money
where
left.
Where did they pick? L.A.?
19.
Oh, is it 19? Yeah, 22, 19.
Sorry, 19,
that's right,
I think?
That's right,
yes.
19. It's funny because, so you're basically saying the Rams just are going to get rid of the first-round picks until they need a quarterback, then they're going to take one. And
right, exactly. Yeah,
hey, so, it worked.
Yep, every time they need a quarterback, they just stick with that first-round pick. So, and look, we spent so much time on number 4 and 27 and 35. Look what the Cardinals did in round 3 last year. Garrett Williams and Michael Wilson. Two building blocks.
Yes.
So this year you have 3 third-round picks, correct? If you're the Arizona Cardinals.
I believe that is correct, sir.
So in a really deep draft at a lot of different positions, you know, don't be surprised if come training camp we're talking about 2 out of those 3 players in round 3 who all of a sudden are turning heads in August.
Unless they take one of those third-round picks to move up from 27 to like 22.
Maybe. Absolutely. And that's the luxury of having 11 picks, right?
Yes.
If you want to throw in an extra pick or two to go up and get the guy that you want, to pull a Howie Roseman, for example. What is it? 3-4 years in a row, the Eagles GM has come up in the first round or gone into the first round because, oh my goodness, that player that we have way up on our board has fallen. Let's go get him. And I presume that's what Monty Osifor meant when he talked to the media about this last week before we actually go on the clock. We're talking about scenarios. Certain guys go, you know, that we have really high on our board, and all of a sudden they're available, and they're still there at 24. Well, what's it take to go from 27 to 24 to make sure we get our guy? So I throw that out there. By the way, just to stir up a little bit, your guy Pete Prisco, you know Pete Prisco fairly well,
don't
you? I do
know a fellow Sun Devil.
Yeah. So CBS Sports, longtime NFL content provider, he does his annual who they should take mock draft. He says, this isn't predictive. This isn't what I think is going to happen. This is what I think should happen on behalf of every team. He has the Cardinals sticking and picking at number 4 and going receiver Malik Nabers.
With Harrison on the board.
With Harrison on the board going number 5 to the Chargers. Let's just say the Red Sea wasn't down with that in that mock draft in particular.
I don't know if the Red Sea really was going to pay attention to it until Paul Calvisi highlighted it on his Twitter feed.
We got to have fun with it. You got to have fun with it. Come on, right? You got to, I mean.
We all love Pete.
Yeah. But.
Yeah. I mean, are you going to sit here and bet your life savings that that couldn't happen?
No.
Why does it always have to be betting life savings or a paycheck with you, Darren?
I'm just saying, because if it's just you putting something out there, then we're just stupid podcasters saying stuff into the wind. There's got to be something on the line, Danny.
But how many scouts, personnel evaluators, all these anonymous sources have been quoted as saying that there's definitely a division between those who like Nabers, some who like Odunze, and some who like Marvin Harrison Jr.
I mean, there are plenty of those people. I will also say that If we were able to get the honest opinion of all 32 teams, if you found, and I'm just throwing numbers out there. I don't know any of this stuff, but you could make that claim that these people are all saying, and it could be like 2 teams like Nabers more, 2 teams like Odunze more, and 28 like Marvin Harrison the most. And you could still say there's a division.
Yeah.
So who knows?
So anyway, I throw that out there. Now, speaking of the whole 20-year anniversary, so you have a story coming out about the draft class.
I'm going to do a blog post about that, yes.
Okay. Pat Tillman, 20-year anniversary as
well. It was Pat Tillman's 20-year anniversary of his death.
Yes.
Which is all, it's been, you know, for somebody who was around for all that, it's kind of crazy to me. Mike Helm, also media relations guru, was his first day of work was today, actually 20 years ago. So he started draft week, but like the weekend of the Fitz draft was weird. You know, Pat Tillman was killed because of the time difference and in the Middle East and everything. He was killed on the 22nd, but everybody really wasn't finding out about it for real until Friday morning, early Friday morning. It was starting to hit all the news. So we came over here.
I remember exactly where I was in the KTAR newsroom when it came down.
I was wearing a bathrobe and feeding one of my kids breakfast. And in those days, the draft was Saturday, Sunday. The first three rounds were Saturday. The last four rounds were Sunday. So Friday was still a preview day. And coming in here and watching Pete Kendall, who was a center at the time, and was a good spokesman, and coming in trying to say some things without breaking down. And Michael Bidwell was trying to talk and was struggling a little bit. Anthony Edwards, the former player turned liaison, he was really obviously upset. And I remember Denny Green, who had just started, he had just been hired in January. And so he didn't know Pat. Like, Pat had never been around. And he just looked a little lost to me because everybody in the building knew Pat still. Almost, and most of the players did, and Denny didn't, and here he is in this really awkward situation. I felt bad for him, but to go from that to the next day, and obviously I already touched on it, where we knew they weren't going to take a quarterback, and then Robert Gallery went too, and then everybody knew Larry Fitzgerald, former Vikings ball boy for Denny Green, and son of a guy who co-hosted a radio show with Denny Green for a number of years, all of a sudden became the Cardinals pick. I mean, that it was just, it was a very interesting, and even thinking back, like, and they had the first pick in every round because they had been the worst team the year before, and it didn't rotate, they didn't tie anybody, so they got the first pick of the second round, which was Carlos Dansby, they got the first pick of the third round, which was Darnell Dockett, who was a force on the field, but he was a little unhinged, which he flashed here and there when he was here, but he was a hell of a player, and they got Antonio Smith later in the draft. They also got Alex Stepanovich, who was their starting center for a couple of years. It was a draft that changed things. When we talk about, when Daniel Jeremiah talks about a draft that can set up a team, that draft set up this team that eventually made the Super Bowl.
Don't the Cardinals have the same seventh-round draft slot that Pat Tillman was selected with?
Yes, they have the 226th pick, which is where they picked Pat Tillman, and there will be a couple of Pat Tillman scholars announcing that pick when the Cardinals make the choice.
Remember the old interviews with Pat where he looked Vince Tobin in the eye and said, hey, I get it. You guys took the local kid with a big following, try and sell some tickets. I get it. They said, no, we like you as a football player. Yeah, don't really buy it, but I'm going to make you like me as a football player. He said, I'm going to show you I can ball and I can play, and the rest was history, and he did it from day one at that training camp. I still remember, and Danny, I don't know if you know this, but I was 7 years ahead of Pat at Leland High School. So
I don't know if you've ever heard this story.
No. This is a story maybe you haven't heard.
Oh, okay.
Because I reminded my dad of this the other day. The first time I had ever heard of Pat Tillman was a phone call from my dad. And he said, hey, Leland's in the CCS championship game, which would be the equivalent of a Bay Area title.
Yeah.
And when I was there, and for every year prior, there was nowhere any chance that the high school would be competitive. Okay, it'd be like coming out of nowhere and taking down Chandler Hamilton or Brophy or something like that. And he said, yeah, they're in the championship game, they got this wrecking ball kid named Tillman, Pat Tillman. And he, sure enough, he was the running back slash linebacker. And if you want to waste some time online, go forget about searching up highlights of Pat Tillman as an Arizona Cardinal or Arizona State Sun Devil. Look for Leland Chargers high school football Pat Tillman. It's out there on YouTube. Nice. And it's phenomenal to watch.
That's awesome.
It really is.
That's awesome.
So I always tell the story. It wasn't just when he was a rookie in 98 the Cardinals won their first playoff game in 50 years. It wasn't just when he was the Pac-10 Defensive Player of the Year when ASU went to the Rose Bowl.
Right.
But it was as a high school player. He elevated everyone out of nowhere to win a championship. So that's my Pat Tillman recollection.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't really agree with the documentaries who portray his Almaden neighborhood as being something out of Hippieville and all the barefoot people walking around Northern California. I didn't think that was a fair depiction of where I grew up. I didn't still take umbrage with that, by the way.
You can umbrage away, Paul.
Yeah, there you go. So it just goes full circle here from Darren and what I view as him being disingenuous with the mock drafts, railing against yet engaging in to the very end. So just bookend umbrage. Here on Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation.